radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Well, hey there, everybody. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under an hour. On today's show, I have a wake-up call with Ewan Curry. Ewan's the frontman of one of Canada's favorite rock and roll bands, the Sheepdogs, who, of course, were thrust into the spotlight in 2011 after winning Rolling Stone's Do You Wanna Be a Rock and Roll Star contest? They became the first unsigned act to don the cover of the magazine. And since then, they've climbed to the top of the Canadian charts and have secured their place as one of this country's premier rock acts. In fact, Ewan says their live show is the best it's ever been. In our chat today, we talk about why Ewan thinks rock and roll may have peaked somewhere between 1968 and 1974, why Halifax could be Canada's rock and roll capital, and about how moving around as a kid shaped his perspective on the world. Ewan also shares the impact his father had on his love of music and eventual career path. In June, Ewan released Strange Vacation, his second solo album, just in time for his move to Nova Scotia. We chat about the album, and of course, we spin tunes from it. So before we get to the talk, let's kick off the show with a song. From Ewan Curry's Strange Vacation, this is Crazy Streets on When We Wake.
Living out on these crazy streets, living life in the bittersweet. You can run, you can try to hide, but there's nobody by your side.
Searching. don't know how much more I can take.
That's Ewan Curry with Crazy Streets off of his recently released solo album, Strange Vacation. It's now time for my wake-up call with
Ewan Curry.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How's the house? I see that you're missing a light in the ceiling still. I see some wiring coming down. Yeah. You're in the process of moving in very much, huh?
Yeah, I got a lot of DIY projects ahead of me.
Do you like that kind of stuff?
No.
No?
But I it's a challenge, and I feel good when I do them, but it doesn't come naturally to me.
I hear that, man. I hear that.
Yeah.
There is something nice about knowing that the job is done, you know? Like, you see it in front of you, and you're like, this is what needs to happen, and so I will go about figuring out how to do it, and objectively, I've done it well or I haven't.
Yes.
And it is finished or it isn't.
Yeah, I've screwed up some stuff. But yeah, when I do something, it makes me feel good because I'm not like inherently handy. And I grew up with a music dad, not a handy dad. So I learned the music side, but not the like hammer and nail side. So I like to challenge myself.
Well, I feel like that's maybe paid off well for you.
Yeah, there's not a lot of hits from being a carpenter, I guess. But just the hitting the nail.
Yeah, that's right. You hit it right on the head on that one.
Hey.
So I didn't know that. Your dad, is your dad still alive?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Great. He still plays music?
Not really. He's not in the best health, so he's
doesn't oh, I'm sorry.
Music much.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. He's okay. He doesn't play much piano anymore, but he used to play a lot.
Yeah, tell me about that. You were born in Australia, is that right?
Yes, I was born in Sydney, and my mom is Australian. My dad is from Moose Jaw.
Oh wow, yeah.
So they met at the U of A in the 70s. Moved back to Australia, had me and my bro. We came to Canada in the 90s, 95.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm an Australian-Canadian, but I've lived in Canada for 3/4 of my life.
Right, 95. You were a kid. You were, you know, what,
10.
Between 5 and 10? Okay, yeah. And so there's music in the house growing up in Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad, he trained to be a classical composer.
Oh, wow.
Talk about a money-earning gig.
No kidding.
Yeah, he went the academic route, and he wrote music on commission for like symphonies. Like, he was a composer in residence at the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra in Australia, and also the Saskatoon Symphony for a bit, where I grew up. So yeah, he has like a real like academic approach to music that's pretty different than how I come at music, you know.
Sure. But,
yeah. Somewhat informed me growing up. Like, we would listen to, we'd listen to all kinds of music. Like, he loved listening to like Frank Sinatra, but it wasn't just about the like words and the melody. He would point out the arrangement. Like, the classic era of Frank Sinatra has like incredible arrangement, like Nelson Riddle and all this stuff. So, paying attention to a lot of what went into the makeup of music and not just the, I guess, the surface level stuff.
Wow, that's invaluable, man. I've heard you talk about when you're writing a song, you hear the arrangement. You know, you're like, this is where the big drums are, or the small drums. You know, this is where the bass is. This is where the fuzzy guitar, whatever. So you're hearing it all. I wonder, does that track back to listening to Sinatra with your dad and hearing, you know, how the whole thing is put together like that?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Like, it's not like a conscious decision I made. Like, it's just kind of how I operate.
Hmm.
I guess, like, yeah, I don't know. I always kind of enjoyed like the major elements of music, like the way the drums sound, or the, like, you know, how many voices are they, double tracked with vocals, are they, what's the instrumentation. So I guess part of it is my dad pointing out like some of that stuff. Like, I remember he and I would like kind of go song for song a couple times, and I was really into like Paranoid Android because I had Big Shiny Tunes 2.
Yeah, we all did.
Which everybody had, I think, in Canada.
Sure.
Paranoid Android was like one of the only songs at that time that my dad thought was interesting that I played him, because he would point out like, it's got good textures, like, you know, there's a lot of like shaker and different acoustic guitar, and then it sort of segues into electric, and he pointed out those are the elements that he made interesting to him. So maybe some of that kind of rubbed off.
Condition makes you look pretty ugly.
Did it make it interesting to you in that moment? Do you remember that? I mean, you remember enough to recall that, but do you remember how it made you feel when your dad was like, this is what's interesting?
I definitely clocked it. Yeah. I think maybe to some degree it like clued me into like paying attention to that. But I think also like a big part of how I work is still very, what's the term? It's just basically like an L of immediacy. Like if something hits, it hits, you know? Like,
right.
I always compare stuff to food because it's like, you know, food is so great because like you put it in your mouth and your mouth tells you if it's good or not.
It's like it's good or bad, right?
Totally. Yeah, that's why I try to operate with my ears. But then when you're trying to make something, you have to kind of break it down and figure out what makes it sound good.
Too salty, or it's not salty enough.
Totally.
When did you start writing songs?
I think somewhat like when I was a kid, I would kind of mess around with, I had like a tape cassette player that you could like record audio to. Like it had an internal mic, I guess.
Right.
I would tape songs off the radio and I would make like mixtapes and I would make like kind of like little two little skits and sing little silly songs. And I wasn't playing an instrument.
For real. That's cool.
Yeah. I was probably like 9 or 10.
You still have them?
No, they're long gone.
What a shame.
Do you ever have those like books that had cassettes that you could read along with?
Totally.
And it would be like, at this sound, turn the page. I made one of those for my bro. Cause he was younger than me. Yeah. It was like, it was about a goose that farted, which is great topic for kids.
Timeless. Really? I mean, my son would love that right now. I'm so sorry. It's lost.
Yeah. I still love farting.
Classic.
And then, when I was a teenager, there was a course at my high school, a course. Well, I sound like I went to private school. There was a class you could take that was good. That was, a guitar class. And it was like one of those classes where they had those wooden blocks that you had to put your leg on and you sat the guitar on your left knee and it was nylon stringed and you learned how to pick and all this stuff.
Great.
And I would just kind of like, I would make up songs in that class and, mostly they were kind of comedic. Like they were almost like kind of Adam Sandler esque songs.
Right. This is like turn of the century, right? Like late '90s, early 2000s kind of thing.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Yeah,
exactly. So this was so very comedic in my early efforts to write songs.
Yeah. 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 What kept you going? Why'd you keep writing songs?
I think I just enjoyed it. And I think in a weird way, it was easier for me to write a song than it was to learn somebody else's song, which is still very much the case, I would add.
That's interesting.
Like anytime I work with somebody that's a professional musician, like a hired gun type of person, I'm always like amazed at how good they are at learning how to play my song or a cover song.
Mm.
And not just like one, but like many in a row and very quickly.
Yeah.
And I guess that's just like a great example of how people just have different skills or skill sets, I guess. Mine is not to learn other people's songs. It's to create my own.
Yeah. Why songs for you? Like, what do you love about that process?
Man, it's like the biggest natural high I get when I feel like I've written a good song.
Mm.
It's like an absolute boost to my mood. Like it's the serotonin rush is real.
Yeah.
And I just really enjoy it. I mean, I grew up sort of like my two music dads are like Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney. And they were just like guys that kind of like wrote songs, played lots of instruments, recorded themselves, really creative in the studio. And so that's kind of who I aspire to be. And yeah, I love the ability to just like sit down with a really rudimentary idea and just create something out of nothing. It's really neat. And it's so cool because you don't need a lot of gear and you don't need a lot of ideas. You just kind of like see where it goes.
Yeah.
It's also like I'm setting up a room in my house to do that. And it's you know, I just feel very free when I do it. It's kind of like a guy who just goes and paints and what does whatever he feels. It's just very liberating, very easy.
From Strange Vacation, let's have a listen to the song Just Me. More of my chat with Ewan Curry after this.
Just me. Feels so good when you let me be. Just me. Feels so good when you let me be. Just me.
All I know is to be free.
Work so hard and about to be. 15 days, maybe then we'll see.
Danny Nash, who's banging the drums and singing along with him there. That's Just Me off of Strange Vacation, a solo album from
Ewan Curry of the Sheepdogs. This is a band that's been going for like over 20 years with your buddies.
Yes.
From Saskatoon. Like, how'd that happen?
Here's a weird, slightly comedic answer, but I'd say we've had enough success, but not too much success.
Yeah.
We've had enough success to keep going. It's our day job. It pays our bills and we can live. Mm. It's not so successful that we can retire or blow the band up and just be like, I'm walking away. I don't need to do this anymore.
Right.
It's a good living or it's a good career. I don't know. It's a really weird job to be like in the year 2025 playing, you know, in a band of original material that kind of plays, for lack of a better term, 70s style rock. But, you know, I think people just dig some good guitar jams, and especially here in Canada, like it's just, there's lots of people that just love to go out to a rock show, and there's less and less of that going on now, especially like considering the dudes from the classic era are passing away or just very old. And we really enjoy what we do. So I think like our live show is better than ever these days. Like we really love playing, and we make records pretty regularly and we take them seriously, even though like our lives are moving into different eras and that kind of thing. But I think it's just hopefully people still feel the love in what we do and they know that we care about what we do and we're not going through the motions and that kind of thing.
Yeah, man. You've called the Sheepdogs a small business and how boring it is with the spreadsheets.
Yeah.
I can only imagine, man.
Yeah.
That's the way it has to be, doesn't it? And you know, you've managed to to persevere and hold on to the love this whole time.
Yeah, it really is a small business. Like, we just have to, you know, we have to be on budget. We book tours. We do all this boring stuff. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Like, we're, you know, our bass player is our manager. So we're very involved in running our business ourselves. We own our own label now, that kind of stuff. So
that's great.
It's been a journey. We've learned a lot, but music industry has really changed incredibly over the tenure of our, like, we started our band like right as like the industry was like absolute panicking about the whole digital era, and it's completely changed all throughout. So
yeah,
you just got to be kind of flexible and be able to brainstorm and pivot and figure out social media, which I'm terrible at, and all this kind of stuff. It's, and I guess maybe it's a lot of it is like not being too rigid. Like, we just can't sit here and be like, I put out records and that's it. And because you've got to like kind of be open to trying new things and all that kind of stuff.
What are some new things that you're trying or that you feel like I think we're going to have to try?
Well, anything social media.
I was going to ask about that because you say you're terrible at that.
Yeah.
What makes you feel like you're terrible at it?
Well, I don't really want to be on social media all the time. I don't want to engage with it. I don't want to be looking at it, and I don't want to post my personal life. And, it feels like it's the best way to engage is to like kind of have a steady, like they tell you, well, you can't just post, you got to post constantly so that you're popping up and people think it's like a full-time job. I mean, you look at people who are influencers, it's a serious job. Like, as much as we want to mock them or whatever, but
yeah,
so I wrestle with that kind of thing, but I do see that it's like, you know, like I'm not swinging by much music to talk about my record or the old guard is not what it once was. So,
right.
I'll be positive for a second. It's cool because sometimes you'll do something on like Instagram or something, and then you can see that it directly leads to people clicking through and buying your record. That is pretty cool. So, so that side of it, you know, if I'm being pragmatic, that is encouraging to see, and that is a positive thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, it would be easier if I could just like put out a record, do one tour, and then sit around my mansion the rest of the time.
I thought you said the secret to your success earlier was that you didn't get to that place.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, that's. I'd say that, yeah, we probably would have broken up 10 years ago if we had the money.
But you'd be sitting in your mansion.
I'd be sitting in my mansion as opposed to my house with no chandelier. You know?
Right, totally. But, I mean, it is a house on a hill,
that's
so
true.
You are, you know, you're looking down on me.
Literally, yes.
quite literally. That's it. As soon as those trees lose their leaves.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good segue. You've moved east. Now, this album, Strange Vacation, was written, my understanding, it was actually written prior to the previous two Sheepdog's albums. So it's been sitting in the can for a bit and then, you know, work and release cycles. But you've said that that the themes that are, you know, that you're exploring on Strange Vacation are largely what brought you east. I was wondering if you could talk about what those, you know, what the themes are and what it is about the East Coast that drew you here.
I think a theme that's run through my music always has been kind of like the quest for finding a place of belonging, a place of, you know, a home. As a kid, we moved around a lot and left one country to come to another. You know, by the time I was 11, I'd lived in four different cities. And then I've just like, sometimes I count up all the houses I've lived in my life. And I think it's like in the 20s, like even as an adult, I moved around a bunch. And then even like in my 20s, I was like on the road so much that I was never around Saskatoon hardly. So I was a bit of a nomadic kind of life and just wanting to really like put down roots. Now I've ended up in the East Coast of Canada, which is a surprising turn, but it does feel like the start of putting down some roots here. It does feel like home, but yeah, it's a constant search for me. Like it's just the feel of like, I don't know if it's belonging, but it's just feeling like at ease somewhere. You know, it's funny because like when I moved to Toronto, I thought I did this like trip where I was going to visit all these cities I was considering moving to, and I went to Toronto first, And I remember as I was leaving Toronto after a week, the plane was taking off and I like kind of knew that I was going to move there already. And I was like, well, I'm going to go to all these other places now. But it was kind of like a fun exploring trip. But
where'd you go?
I went to Toronto. Then I flew to Halifax, weirdly enough, for a couple of days. Mm. Then I was in like Nashville, Memphis, LA, and San Francisco. Because those are places that I had friends at and stayed with people. And I was close to moving to San Francisco at one point in like 15 years ago or six, or maybe not quite that long, but
San Francisco, obviously on the West Coast, and here you are on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Something about the coasts, you know, on the title track to this album, Strange Vacation, you say, I've always dreamed of being a nautical man.
Yeah.
Well, what's that mean? And, well, here you are. Do you have any plans to be one out here?
Yeah. Well, I can see the ocean from up here behind me. I can see the harbor, but
I mean, quit bragging, man. All I can see are the houses in front of me.
Yeah, sorry.
And right now, I can see my drive.
It's my hill privilege showing.
Totally.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes lyrics are just fun things to say, you know. Or if I may quote the great Alan Doyle, he said when he was asked about one of his lyrics, he's like, "Oh, that's just something to say while you're holding a guitar." You know,
there's got to be more to it, right? There's a little.
No,
bit.
I actually
you're born in Sydney.
I'm drawn to the ocean. I am drawn to the ocean. Australia is a country where the 95 or more of the population is based around the coast. And then I grew up in Saskatoon, which is about as far from the ocean as you can get. Like probably, you know, I don't know if there's any place in the world that's further from it.
According to Google, it's far, but it's not the furthest. I don't know which city is. From you and Curry's Strange Vacation, here's the title track. More of our chat after this.
All I need is a little time away. So I drifted down to a tropical isle today. I've always longed to be a nautical man. Got to spend my days adrift in sun and sand.
prone to seasickness, you better keep your eyes on the horizon when listening to that one. That's Ewan Curry with the title track to his solo album, Strange Vacation. Now back to my wake-up call with Ewan.
I want to talk about the songs on this album a little bit.
Yeah.
You had a something in mind, you know, tonally, you know, production-wise for the song that kicks off the album, Big Pine Key, that totally flipped in studio when you started recording it, that it went from being a sort of lonesome country idea to this big sort of wall of sound, Phil Spector thing.
Yeah.
What's that feel like when your expectations are flipped like that?
Well, it's as simple as you have an idea of what it's going to sound like. You start laying it down. Like you go into the set of a microphone, you play the guitar and you start singing, you hear how it sounds, you start adding things to it. And then it starts to veer from what you thought it was going to be. And at that juncture, you can either go with it or you can force it back into what you thought was in your head. And I've done both. Sometimes I'm like, no, I want it to be more like this. But I think in that moment I was like, oh no, this is way cooler this way. Mm. And so I just kind of went with it. And I kind of like it. Like I like summery music and I like a big drum beat. And then my buddy Trevor came and drummed on it. And we had a cool, like reverby drum sound. That's kind of where the Spectre-y wall of sound thing came in. But, that's the fun part of the studio is if you get in there and it's like, do you force it down the road of what's in your mind or do you embrace the, like, this is evolving into a different thing?
Mm. And then I imagine, is there a point at the end of it where you're like, actually, I'm glad we went this road, but it's let's head back. Let's start again. Does that ever happen to you?
It's definitely happened. But I'd say more often than not, it's better to follow the natural direction that the song wants to go, because that's where you find discovery and things that you didn't expect. Like,
yeah,
like there's a song on our Sheepdogs record, Changing Colors, called Let It Roll. That's like this slow, steady song with pedal steel and strummy guitar. And it started off as this kind of like peppy upbeat song. And it was so damn cheesy that I was just like, ugh, this is disgusting. And then we slowed it down and found the right kind of flavor. And it just opened up and was this, it's one of my favorite songs we've ever done. Mm. But that was like a great example of like, that really like reinforced to me that it's like the song kind of dictates where it wants to go.
What made it, I imagine it changes from situation to situation. It's one of those things where you're like, you know it or you don't, but what made it cheesy?
It's hard to explain. I mean, it was kind of like funky. Like it was kind of like, it just made me think of a mediocre blues band or something. Or like, uh-huh. I love like funk rock band or something like that.
Okay. It didn't feel like the Sheepdogs.
No, we're a different brand of mediocre blues rock, really.
Get out of here. Sure. It didn't feel genuine, I guess, is what I'm sort of hearing. It didn't.
No, it just, I didn't like it. Like a taste is a big thing. Like you got to like what you're doing. You know, you just, your ears will tell you. Like, I just was like, nah, this isn't right. Like this just sounds bad. So I have a very, I think one of the like biggest skills if you're working in the studio and it's part of why the production and the arrangement is so integral to how I write music. I just have a very strong sense of what I like and and that really drives how I work.
From the Sheepdogs, Changing Colors, released on my birthday in 2018. Thanks, Ewan. This is the once cheesy, little too funky, little too upbeat, but now oh so cool, Let It Roll. Not to be confused with the 2009 compilation of George Harrison songs, Let It Roll. More of my chat with Ewan Curry, frontman of the Sheepdogs, after this. Hey, look, I like a good long fade out as much as the next guy. Why don't we just let it roll all the way out? That's the Sheepdogs from Changing Colors with Let It Roll. Now back to my wake-up call with Ewan Curry.
Where did the love of that, the 70s production vibe, how did that start for you? Like, why the 70s specifically? Why those production techniques and that orchestration arrangement to your music?
It's just what I like. I mean, I grew up certainly listening to a lot of that stuff through my parents because, you know, they were young in the 60s and 70s, but so they would play that and I would, you know, listen to Creedence and the Bee Gees and the Carpenters and the Beatles and stuff. Mm. But yeah, I mean, even in high school, I just got like, there was a time when I was listening to like the Much Music Video Countdown and watching it rather. And, you know, I went to Edge Fest in 1998 and saw Green Day and Foo Fighters. But then I completely flipped where I was just like, no, I'm listening to the Beatles. I'm listening to the Zeppelin, et cetera. To me, it's not about an era. Like, I don't like want to be in the 70s. Mm-hmm. It's about a style, the way drums sound, the way the types of guitar tones, the way they would record vocals. It's just like, it's like, you know, cars from the 50s look cooler than cars now.
Yeah.
Or like mid-century modern.
Sure.
Interiors are very appealing and very popular. And it's just, it was very in vogue at a style, but it's also sometimes it's pervasive. And to me, like, I think Joe Walsh said something about how like the rock and roll music of the 60s and 70s is going to be looked at like, you know, the Beethoven and Mozart to classical music. Like, it's the finest era of the form that is rock and roll music.
You think that's true? I guess you do.
I 100%. Like, that's the best rock ever got. Mm. It's only gotten worse. There's still some great bands here and there. But the biggest concentration of it was 1968 to 74 or something like that. Yeah.
What's happened to rock? Why has it gotten worse, do you think?
It's just evolved. I think it got punk. It got bloated. It got proggy. It got corporate-y. It got alt, grungy. It got indie. Those are just offshoots of what we now call classic rock. But, you know, now it's like we're in a world where it's pop music and it's country. Country is huge, you know, like that's what people play guitar, are playing country, I guess.
Country and hip hop, two sides of the same album.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, people still love to rock. Like they come to our shows. So that's a nice thing, but it's just not the pervasive art form that it once was.
People do still come to rock shows. I mean, let's chat about the big one that's coming up in, on the South Shore of Nova Scotia. Later next month, you're playing with another, you know, Matt Mays, badass rock and roll from out here, and Kathleen Edwards and the Sheepdogs. You're doing a 3-night stand, 2,000 people each night. They're all sold out. People are still coming to see rock and roll.
Well, certainly on the East Coast of Canada. I love that about it out here.
Oh, yeah? You find there's a difference in the love of rock out here?
Yeah, I mean, it does remind me of prairie people, but maybe it's a little more country out that way, but... No, big time. Well, I think there's more musicians out here. Like, I feel like per capita, more people have an instrument in their home on the East Coast of Canada. Like, there's just a lot of people who are like, oh, this is my uncle's guitar or whatever it is, fiddle or whatever, you know, a little bit of a piano player or something. Hmm. So I think there's just more of a musical background to the history out here. But like, look, Halifax is pound for pound the music city, I guess, in Canada to me. Like,
you think? Wow.
I mean, I'm just talking like historically, because like April Wine, Sloan, Matt Mays, Joel Plaskett, that's a really strong start right there. Like, that's at least, you know, if for me, like as a young man playing guitar, I really looked up to all those acts. Uh-huh. Obviously, I'm from the West, so I'm a big Guess Who, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young guy too, but and the band are great, but they're Ontario. The Nova Scotian rock and roll is very strong.
That's cool. I didn't realize you were such a Plaskett fan. Sheepdogs contributed a song to the cover album that came out just before Joel's 50th a few months ago now. What'd you guys do down at the Khyber? Is that what you did?
Yes, we did.
Talk to me about that. Why'd you choose that song?
It's just my favorite of his songs. It's just very it's kind of the perfect Joel song because it's like a killer riff, autobiographical detail, eccentric, takes you on a journey, and just rocks. Like, that's a classic Joel song to me, all those elements. So I was really, really glad that we got to do that and nobody else was fighting us for it.
Well, let's have a listen to it. From Songs from the Gang, a celebration of Joel Plaskett, an album that was released earlier this year in April, just before his 50th birthday. This is the Sheepdogs taking on Joel's 2001 classic, the title track to Down at the Khyber. More of my chat with Ewan Curry after this.
I've been away, and I've been traveling. And I spent a month in bed until the visions came to me quicker. Well, I saw ghosts and I saw red. I saw ghosts and I saw red. Am I still alive? Where did I collide? Edmonton, Alberta, home in Halifax, floating me down the river to the Muscadet Harbor, 'cause I'm getting nowhere. Toss off. Perhaps it is, perhaps it ain't. Do you remember at the sock hop? Did I dance or did I faint? Did I dance or did I faint? Did I dance or did I? Did I think?
telling me that the Sheepdogs didn't write that song? That's the Sheepdogs doing Joel Plaskett's Down at the Khyber. Now back to the conclusion of my wake-up call with Sheepdogs frontman Ewan Curry.
I mean, you and I met in his studio at Fang Recording when you had a very cool thing, man. You when you released Strange Vacation, it's my understanding that you might not ever play a show in support of it. So you had, instead, you did a listening party where we listened to the album, I think twice, at Fang in Joel's studio.
Yeah.
Well, how did that come about? Why did you choose to do that?
I was trying to find a good place to have a hang and a listening party. And it was a great spot. Like, it was, you know, it sounds nice in there. So, yeah, it was a good hang. I didn't want to do a show because it's too difficult and I don't have time. So I just had a hang. And it was a nice little way for me to kind of, like, meet a few new people like yourself in the HRM. And, yeah, it was great.
Small business networking, hey?
I can never not have more new. I'm always eager for more friends. Like, I love meeting new people. I love
I get that.
You know, there's a lot of great people here and all over this country. Like, I just love meeting new people. It's great
to hear you talk about having moved, you know, you grew up in Australia and then you moved to Canada, and you said, I think by the time you were 11 you'd moved four different times in Canada. It's similar to me, man. I by the time I was 12, I'd lived in we'd moved five times. Then we went to England, then Chicago, and then I finished high school in Philly, and then in my adult life. So there was that constant change, and, you know, new place, new people, every 2-3 years usually. I'd be curious to hear from you, like, if you think that has informed the way, you know, you just said, I like meeting new people. I can't have enough, you know, I'm always open to meeting new friends. I know moving around for me, it informed that aspect of my personality and the way I approach life. How do you think it's for yourself? How do you think it's informed your perspective of the world?
It's definitely has informed the way I view the world. I noticed that a number of authors I like to read, you know, novelists and writers, often would come from backgrounds where they, you know, moved around, whether it was army or diplomat, children of army personnel or diplomats. And so it sort of made me think about how when you change cities a lot and you're the new kid, you do a lot of observations as an outsider because you're constantly brought into a new classroom where you're the one outsider and it really hones your skills as an observationist. And you've also got to learn to be, first of all, and to break the ice. And so I do think that has really informed me. Like, I do make friends easily, I can be personable, but at the same time, like, I do feel I have this little intrinsic sense of being an outsider as well, just because I'm always like, you know, I'm known as a guy from Saskatoon, but I was not born in Saskatoon. I was born in Australia, but, like, if I go to Australia, they think I'm from America when I speak.
I hear you, man.
You know, it's just, so it's that sense that, I guess, also contributes to the sense of, like, lack of belonging, you know, and certainly being in, you know, being here in Nova Scotia is so intensely tied into the personalities of the musicians out here, Mays and Plaskett and Adam Baldwin. And like, it's just like, it's on their sleeves. It's really tied in.
When they're wearing sleeves.
When they're wearing sleeves, yeah. Baldwin especially. I would never, like, pretend that I'm that. Like, I'm just this guy that kind of, I'm like a chameleon, I guess. I don't know. Like, I remember, like, my friend, who's actually a great drummer in high school, was, like, criticizing David Bowie because it's like, he just changes his style. He's a chameleon. And I was just like, how's that a bad thing? He's amazing.
Yeah.
There's something to the, I think when you're a kid and you just have to bop around all these different places, you can either, I think it just really sharpens your outsider observations. And I think that has definitely informed who I am, I guess. Yeah.
Word for word, I feel that in every aspect of my being. So now you're about to become a dad.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled for you. So, you know, knowing how you moved around as a kid and how it's informed who you are now, and knowing that your career as a musician is going to continue taking you places.
Yes.
What do you anticipate for the young Curry to come? What kind of life do you want or do you imagine they're coming into?
Yeah, I got to say, I hope we don't move around like I did. I mean, not here I am praising the side effects of being the outsider. I would like a bit more of a stable childhood, some stability and a chance to kind of grow up with a really solid foundation. My childhood was I wouldn't say tumultuous, but it wasn't real solid. So, or a little shaky at times. So, and I don't think any parent would ever want to replicate that for their kids. So I'm trying to really establish a really solid home for them. I don't know the gender yet. And, as far as music goes, obviously there's going to be a lot of music in the house, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't want to push. I grew up with a musician father who wanted me to be an engineer or a architect or something. And I became a musician. So we'll see how that goes.
Ewan Curry, really great to chat with you today.
Thanks, Andrew.
I'm so happy you're out here looking down on me and my family.
In more ways than one. No, it's just
let's go out on a song. Do you have one on the album that is particularly special to you that you'd want to go out on here?
I'm gonna play the last song on a record. It's called Picture Me, and it is about my girlfriend Nicola and moving out here. So let's go on that.
Picture Me is the album closer. It's going out to Nicola. It's about Nicola, the mother of your child to be.
Yes.
Why did it close the album?
On an album filled with questions, uncertainty, some miserable moods, this was a song of optimism and a song of here's where I'm going.
All right, Ewan. It's really great chatting, man.
Cheers, buddy.
Picture me in the city. I'm alive to the street. If it wasn't for you watching over me, tall buildings grew. Long shadows too. This ain't the place I'm supposed to be. Picture me in the country. I'm lost to the sea.
A love song for the mother of his child-to-be. That's Picture Me from Ewan Curry's Strange Vacation. It closes the album, so it's fitting that it's going to close today's episode. Big thanks to my guest, Ewan Curry. My neighbor, don't you know? If you'd like more information on Ewan or the Sheepdogs, thesheepdogs.com, ewancurry.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, or you can go to Instagram, at thesheepdogs, and as much as Ewan hates it, he's active, at Ewan J. Curry. The Sheepdogs are going on tour with Bryan Adams this fall. Holy moly. I'm at The Andrew Shaver or at When We Wake Radio. Our theme song is Got You by my friend and yours, Noah Reed. Thanks for listening.
Down the short set of stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic. Every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
Yeah, she's talking about making bacon with me, DJ Over Easy, Saturday mornings from 8 till 10.
You produce your own oil and allow others to taste and see that CFRC is good.
The staff at Martha's Table provides a caring place where people in need can have a nutritious meal for only $1. Now you can get involved in this great cause.
Martha's Table is looking for volunteers to help in the kitchen, at the drop-in center, picking up food, or even being a friendly face at fundraising events.
Volunteer orientation is every Thursday at 4:30 in the drop-in center, and volunteers must be 14 years of age or older.
You can donate using a credit card through marthastable.ca, or you can send your donation by mail, cash, check, or bank draft.
Martha's Table, 629 Princess Street. Whether it's volunteering, donating, or anything else that you can offer Martha's Table, visit their website, marthastable.ca.
My name is Jean Legault, Science 82, former CFRC alumnus, jazz director from 1980 to 1982. I'm thrilled to be back on campus. I can't describe how important CFRC was to me, not only as a training ground, it helped me develop my confidence in public speaking, and as far as my love of music, was developed directly from this station. The wealth of records back then, we didn't even have CDs, and the people, the terrific volunteers that were here. I want to thank CFRC, and I'm really pleased, and I'm amazed at the technology that's here, and I'm wishing you all the best of success. This is Jean Legault for CFRC 101.9 FM.